Boy, I like recording this. I like writing it and playing it. I like my sitar work on here, too. That was pretty good. Just like flying in a spaceship. My birds want to be a part of one of these shows, so I'll have to bring them down, I guess. Well, it's another Tuesday night at the drive-in theater with Dr. Fred Bell. And I understand we're getting more UFO-oriented again now. Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, May 9th, 2006. Tonight we're going to revisit Dr. Bell. We're going to go back and talk about my old radio show about my first contacts with Semyasi and how all that went. And then we're going to jump into 1995. From 1984, we're going to jump into Seattle Expo in 1995. It was March. And we're going to talk about ET science and drama and intervention. So it'll be a jam-packed UFO night with Dr. Bell. Now, I think he's getting ready to come on now. I've heard him in the background there. I don't quite sure where I heard him, but I know he's there. So all we got to do now is just see if he's available, and as soon as I can get him queued up, we'll have Dr. Bell on, you know. The music wants to keep playing, I can tell that tonight.
This is Dr. Fred Bell's Health and Energy Show, heard on your talk alternative, 93.5 KFOX.
Isn't it great to have two radio shows simultaneously?
I've had to think long and hard about what I'm about to do, revealing this whole story of how I had my own 10 years and ongoing experience with UFOs. It's not that I'm afraid to do it. It's just that, on one hand, I'm saying to myself, I don't want to be thought of as trying to prove something or gain any kind of recognition doing this, because I'm going to explain step by step how I had an experience and how I began to have experiences. And I'm sure that by doing this, a lot of people out there are going to have the same experience, because I'm going to open up some knowledge that heretofore has not been opened up on this planet. I know that. And it's going to cause a lot of tremendous positive changes. One of the questions that I get is, how did I get involved and why was I chosen?
See what
and
came
a lot
out
of the sciences that I'm proficient
now
in.
Now you'll have some
hindsight. Technology originated away from the Earth and came here and was transmitted to me by various encounters that I've had with these people in various locations around the world. And I think that if you really were to look at science and some of the experience of other scientists, they've had very similar experiences in their lives. Like, for example, there's the first thing that was kind of strange for some people. It used to blow my parents out, and that was a thing that was called continuity of consciousness, meaning that I didn't forget my immediate last lifetime, where I was before I came to be born here on Earth. It's just as vivid and has remained as vivid, the day before I was born, the day I was born, the day after I was born, even now, it's just as vivid, the conversations that took place. Nothing has changed. No amount of hypnosis or drugs or poisons or toxins or anything has ever changed that same steadfast feeling and knowledge that it was initially ingrained into me before I was born. And I believe that anyone has the ability to attain that level of consciousness merely by being truthful. I think that truth is the middle, truth is the beginning, and truth is the end of life. There are no intellectual ways to reach enlightenment. There are no nutritive ways to reach enlightenment. You have to be truthful with yourself. And I always admit to myself that if I were one of God's sons, I'm probably the worst one that he's got. But the fact is, I know that I'm a son of God, and I'm proud of it. But it also is a humbling experience, because I know that anything that I do against the universe is going to come back on me tenfold instantly, where some people that aren't quite as aware of what they're doing and their actions might have to wait a few hours or a few days or a few weeks. So these are the kinds of things that I was taught and felt as a child. I remember just before I was born, I was like having this conversation with the people that were around me saying, well, here I go. You know, it's like, you could imagine, you ever been back east where they have those emergency fire slides where you jump in a tunnel and you go down two stories in a black circular tunnel and you come out at the bottom and you're in the daylight again? Have you ever seen those things? They have them at the University of Michigan. That's where I used to play on them.
No, Dr. Bell, I don't think I've ever seen those.
Well, out here they have fire escapes that you go down the side of a building and they're in the open. But back east, because of the snow and the sleet and all of that, they have at various levels tunnels that you jump into that go down, you know, they go down the side of the building, and you go down like two stories inside this tunnel, like on a slide. It's like something out of Disneyland. And when I was born, it reminded me of that, because I used to play on those as a kid. And I remember the feeling that it was different. And I remember this conversation that I had and the people telling me that they would be joining me later on in life. At that time, I couldn't really relate to it. But it began to happen in about 1973. But anyhow, after that conversation I had with these people that I was with, I remember opening my eyes and looking up at the University of Michigan, where you're born, whatever they call that particular part of the hospital, the obstetric ward. And I was looking at four people, two men and two women, in green smocks and green masks with those green, like hats on there, like sort of paper-like material for sanitation reasons. And I was looking up at them, and I was being delivered at that point. And I remember saying, oh, no. You know, I know what the next part is like. And what was happening is, what was running through my mind at that time was, I was able to understand English and everything that was being said, everything that was going on, and I was totally powerless because this form that I was in could not respond to any of the mental stimulus that was going on in my mind. And then as I grew up, when I was about 2 years old, I used to play with the kids around me. And I enjoyed playing with the kids, but they were so easy to manipulate. And so as a result, I became very reclusive because I found myself having a tendency to manipulate kids. And this is the animal nature I was starting to fight at this time, the animal nature of my body. And what I would do is I would do bad things with kids. I would get them to do something bad and get a spanking for it, you know. And I would, for example, breaking a window or destroying something in the house. You know, I had this negative nature. I guess we all have to fight through that as a child. And I overcame that around 4 years old. When I was four, my mother started teaching me how to read. And, you know, because I didn't know how to really read at that time. I was learning how to read. I knew how to speak. I knew how to listen. And I knew how to understand what was being said. But the actual art of reading, I had to reintegrate my body. So this is the kind of childhood that I started out with. When I was about 6 years old, I was inventing lots of things. The first thing I invented was little wooden men on little horses. Did you guys ever play with wooden men when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, we had army men.
Oh, little army men.
Little army, rubber army men.
Oh, yeah, you guys were into war already. We were into cowboys and Indians. We used to take the lids off of coffee cans and punch holes in them and make little wagons, and then we would take clothes hangers and make little things over the top and then put cloth over and make little covered wagons. I used to use a cigar box, four coffee can lids, and then and a piece of cloth, like an old sheet or something, and make the neatest little covered wagons. We made little people and little everything you ever saw. Then I got into about 7 years old. I began to start building little boats, model boats that had motors in them, model airplanes, and I began to have dreams. All this time, I was dreaming, and every night I'd go to sleep and have the same dream. I was getting in a flying saucer, and I was flying all over the world, and that was my escape from reality at that time, I suppose. And I had these dreams up until I was about 16 years old, almost every night, the same dreams. Then as I got older, I began to think about, you know, there must be... I used to stand out when we lived in Missouri. I used to stand out on the hillsides and look out into space and just hear these voices in the sky. I could just literally hear it. It sounded like 1,000 different voices coming from the stars. And I could hear stars, you know, words from one constellation moving over to another. And it was just so easy to do. But to relate that to anyone... couldn't do it. Nobody could relate to it at all. Even some of the scientific geniuses that I started to work with when I was 14 at the University of Michigan couldn't relate to that aspect of life. They could relate to the possibility of extraterrestrials, but they couldn't relate. When it got right down home where it was a one-on-one with that kind of experience, people were afraid. I found that constantly appearing in my life, so I became very silent about it. So then when I went in the Air Force, was stationed up by Northern California at Point Arena, This is when I was 17 years old, and I was about 18 when I got on my first assignment. I'd been to school for about a year and a half. And we began to, at Point Arena, watch these flying saucers drop. And at Point Arena, you've got to realize, is the furthest part of the western United States out to sea, which is in Northern California. So literally, we were on a peninsula out to sea in a very remote part of the ocean. And the water is very cold because the Aleutian currents are coming down from Alaska up there. And we were stationed on a mountain that's about 5,000 feet tall, which was very, very much exposed to the elements. And I, in those days, as even now, I was riding motorcycles. And, of course, riding those, it keeps your awareness on a constant, keeps you very keen. Your perceptions are very up because you are one with the environment all the time. And so I was, as a matter of fact, even during then, I moved off the base and found an old log cabin. I was living in that in my off-duty hours. But my on-duty hours, I was constantly watching these spaceships drop from space. And we used, at that time, we used four different kinds of radar sets. We had two types that were what were called height sets. One was an ANFPS-6 radar, which is a very powerful radar set that looked up to about 100,000 feet and about 20 miles out to sea. Then we had an ANFPS-26 radar, which looked up to about 150,000 feet and looked out to sea about 150 miles. That was the new radar made by General Electric that we were using. And these were called height sets, and they had a horizontally polarized beam that would look at an object dropping up, going up or down, and it would measure the distance and speed, you'll have time ascending or descending, and that was what they were designed for. Then we had two other kinds of radars. One was called an ANFPS-8, which was a distance set. It was one that looked out how far away is the object and which way on the horizon is it going. Is it going north, south, east, or west? And so we would combine the height sets with the searching sets to get a perfect readout. This would be fed into a computer at Beale Air Force Station, which is located up north of Santa Rosa, California, and inland a little ways. Then we had a big radar, which was called an ANFPS-35, which had a 366-foot antenna on it, and 5 megawatts of power, 5 million watts of power. Now, you talk about radiation when you're working directly around a microwave, you know, oven, if you call it, a 5 million watts. That's a lot of power to be around. This is the high-power environment that I was learning my early, you know, Air Force and military and science career in. So these UFOs would come down. They would come across the, it could come in towards California to about a distance of 20 miles offshore. And then they would accelerate at a lateral speed or horizontal speed about 5,000 miles an hour from Northern California somewhere down into Northern Mexico. When they got down into Mexico, they would make a left-hand turn, and radar down there would pick them up, and they would move off across the Atlantic Ocean. So this was the path that was pretty regular, and because of that, you know, we had a form. It was called a DDS Form 332 that we filled out, and this was a identification form for military people that were running radar sets to identify flying saucers, but the forms typically would go in the shredder. Nobody really wanted to know about that. It's sort of like the instance over at Pearl Harbor when the Japanese were coming in. Their airplanes were seen on radar, but nobody really paid attention to them because they'd never seen airplanes on radar coming from Japan before, so they couldn't therefore be there. And Pearl Harbor, of course, was a result. But this is the same thing here. So I spent, you know, some time in the Air Force, and I got away from it, and this UFO thing was building in me again. It was starting to build up. I was thinking about it more and more, but not all the time. But having, you know, most of my life been around this type of phenomenon, it was not new, but it was still undefined as far as I could remember, you know. So then I moved down here and started to work at Rockwell and worked with the Wernher von Braun for quite some time. We were working on the Saturn. And I began to, at that time, receive very faint telepathic contacts. As a matter of fact, I was reading a book by a guy by the name of Churchward and Harrington, I believe it was, about astral projection, because I'd had the experience a couple times unconsciously when I was a child. And I was trying to understand more about astral projection, and I was reading this book, and it was very much written on a mental level. It was not much feeling going on in my body at that time as far as this went. I could just think it in thoughts. So until you develop feeling, those of you that have ever become contactees, it's very important to realize that the body is really the true thermometer of an experience, more than the mind. The mind typically is going to be deceptive until the body is well trained to the feeling, because the feeling of this kind of communication really begins it's a total body experience, not a mental thing that it could have happened or did it happen. Those kinds of thoughts are really pretty much ego or thoughts of others that are just cast out there. So at this time I was very mental, but I had a definite contact about 1966, and I was working on the radar console. I didn't know who the contact was from or what it was from or even what it was, but I remember telling a couple of fairly skeptical engineers that there was going to be a UFO sighting at this NASA complex that I was working on, and I felt it would have something to do with the release of the first vehicle for the moon. Well, when the first Saturn rolled out, it was about 4 o'clock in the morning in a Seal Beach facility, a spaceship came to our facility. I was inside and didn't see it, but 400 people outside saw it. And you got to realize, during this time, I was working 12 hours a day on, 12 hours a day off, 365 days a year. That was my work schedule. We got one day off a year, and that was Christmas. And the reason we were working on this schedule is because our part of the defense contract and the aerospace contract was a year behind. So everybody else, all the other subcontractors like Douglas and Hughes and all of them, were getting all their parts of the moon launch ready. But here we were with S2, which is the second stage of Saturn, a year behind. So we had to work on all the time. And so my shift at that time was between midnight and 12 o'clock noon. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I always took a nap because I was burnt out. You know, after a year of that, you get tired. So I slept through this whole UFO encounter, although I understand that a few photographs were taken. And then they found out, you know, after this happened, a few people that had mentioned this to didn't consider me such an idiot after all, you know, because I was always condemned for bringing this subject up in professional circles. So that was the first incident that had any significance in my life where I actually had a prediction. So then things kind of died down for quite a while, and I went on and I began to study yoga practices. Yoga practices to me were quite a bit. I lost a lot of weight. I was very slim then. I went 7 years as a vegetarian, a year as a fruitarian, very strict diet, no alcohol, nothing. I was very, very clean. My body completely cleaned out. Went out on the desert, had an Indian ceremony with the Indians where they kind of run you through, you get large amounts of poisons put in your body. Basically, they have rattlesnakes bite you in some of the ceremonies, and you're on a sacred mountain, and you go through this ordeal for about 3 days. So I went through that. The American Indians thought I was great, and they started studying with Tibetans, and they thought I was doing all right. I was like a cosmic student at this time, like I still am. So then I came back and began to form an encounter group because I knew there was more to this UFO thing than had met the eye. And one of the things that, one of the forms of yoga that I learned from the Tibetans, which is called a trispasso, in some of these new age consciousness classes that are being taught, like spoon bending and firewalking and that, they call it transfiguration. Are you familiar with any of those terms, Jim?
Well, I don't think so, not in the context you're using them.
Okay, this is where you ever get in a conversation with somebody and you look into their left eye and you find them looking back in your left eye?
No.
Well, try it. You know, when next time you talk to somebody, you know, one of the first forms of communication is whether the eyes wander or not. If the person is not telling the truth, they typically can't look at you. They have to look at the floor, the ceiling, the walls, and their eyes shift first. And you've probably seen people like that, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, try looking in the left eye, right in the left eye, and don't mistake it for the right eye. The left eye is the spiritual eye, and the right eye is the grounding eye in the body.
Now, we mean the left from your point of view, right?
Yeah, from my point of view, the left. And that would be assume yourself in the other person's position and from the left, their point of view.
So that would be a diagonally across from your left eye.
Right, right. And that's called a trispasso. When I worked with Lawrence Kennedy, we were doing that with transfiguration. And at the end, you just practice with people unconsciously. And if you'll notice when you're looking at their left eye, you know, and it gets brighter, it'll appear to get a little larger and a little bit brighter. That's telling you that person is moving toward the spiritual side of their nature in their life. Then if you don't see it getting brighter and you have a tendency to shift over and look at the person's right eye, if you find yourself kind of wandering to the other side of their body, and then it feels like you get a better communication when you look at the right eye, that person is not spiritually awakened yet. Doesn't mean whether they're good or bad. It means that they're still working in their mental nature and their physical nature more than their spiritual nature. And you'll find that everybody's eye has a polarity about it. And so I learned that one. So I always concentrate on the person's left eye unless I realize right away that I'm not getting feedback. Then I'll shift to the right eye. But I never look at both eyes, hardly ever. Because if you look at one eye or the other, it keeps you, it keeps your brain very active, and it keeps you very communicative, and you have a tendency less, you know, not to drift. When I was learning hypnosis, that my hypnosis teachers used to tell me to look at the person's, the bridge of their nose. But, you know, I could see why they would have you look at the bridge of the nose. Preferably, when I was younger learning hypnosis, I used to hypnotize, like, mass audiences, and I used to hypnotize my whole senior class in high school, you know. I had them all under one time. Even the teacher, one of the teachers. But what happens in hypnosis is, because hypnosis is a pseudo action. It's not really in the truth. It's more in the world of emotion. And you look at the bridge of the nose so that you don't start giggling or something, you know, because people have a tendency to giggle if it's their first time, because they feel good, but they don't know why, so they can't control their emotional energies that much. So, I personally don't even believe in hypnosis today. Once in a while, somebody will ask me to do a regression, but I won't do the regressions anymore unless I'm really forced to, because I don't really feel it's of any importance. I believe that the past lives, the present, and the future is all in this very moment. And so for that reason, you really don't need to go back into the past to search out yourself, because what you are now is what you've always been. And if you don't like what you are, you just have to say to yourself, I don't like this aspect of me, and I'm going to change instantly. And then instantly you can change, and you just have to hold that change, and that's a discipline. And holding that change is one of the things that I began to go through, because when I went through the beginning of my Indian and Tibetan ceremonies, I didn't like the person that I was. I was very dissatisfied with what I was as a person. I knew that I was of some intellectual stature, but I was very satisfied with my personality and my relationship with other beings. So in the process, we got into this thing called the traspaso. Now, the next step of it is to do what's called fire breathing. This is where the transfiguration begins to come. And this is now where you're not talking to somebody and unconsciously looking into their left eye. This is where you're consciously looking at someone. They're consciously looking back. Both of you know and are aware that you're looking into the left eye, and you just stare that way for 10 or 15 minutes. Now, you can practice with yourself in a mirror, but don't be alarmed that when you practice with yourself in a mirror, that you see some kind of a distorted face or a caveman face or a hairy face, or you might see a god face or a divine face. You'll see many, many different natures that's dormant within all of us. And the purpose is not to see how your face changes because of this, this rebounding of energy that's taking place. The purpose of that is to open up any kind of blockages, any psychic blockages in the 10th cranial nerve, any blockages throughout this whole psych system of the body, so that you become receptive to the true things that are at hand. So oftentimes we're storing up a lot of negative tensions, and this will release all of this. So once you practice with yourself in a mirror, some people will practice looking into a candle, just staring into a candle, and then having the mirror in the background, whatever it takes, or staring into a mirror with candlelight, and whatever it takes to release you from these inner tensions, it's very necessary so that you can begin to develop your mental capacities, your clairvoyant powers, your telepathic powers, because we all have this. The children that are coming into this planet will have to work through a lot less of this than we do, but we, because of our age and the time frame that we're in now, have to work through this. So I began to set up classes back about in the late 60s with people where they would physically come over to my house, sit down on the floor, and for 4 or 5 hours do heavy fire breathing and nothing but traspasos. And what we were doing then is we were working on the higher element of the human imagination, freeing ourselves of this bondage of these everyday mundane things. And everybody really enjoyed it. Matter of fact, it spread very rather rapidly. A lot of people got involved with this. I saw some very, what I would call, straight orthodox people getting involved with this kind of thing. Well, finally, I took the cream of the crop of the classes, and I began a very one-on-one relationship. The kinds of people that I now had were high, what I would call high-level sensitives. One of them was a friend of mine that was a sitar player for Ravi Shankar in those days. So he was an American, and he'd worked with Rod Stewart and a lot of those people. But he was a very sensitive, high-level musician. And he would, every morning, I would wake up in my house in Laguna, the other house I had on the hill. About 6 o'clock in the morning, I would smell this fresh fragrance of incense and hear the sitar playing. So that was the way, that was the environment that we were living in at that time, a lot less stressful than the kind of environment that I'm personally into now. And we began to elevate our consciousness. Then what we did is in this class, we had a certain amount of what I would call sensitive women. So we began to do... We began to balance off the people, the men, male females, with the proper pairing and do the fire breathing with women. And this was the beginning of the what would later on lead to the contact with Sumiyasi.
That is part one of this tape that we're doing there. And that 30 minutes went really fast. So the next part we're going to cover here in a second. It was real interesting because the Trespasso side of all of this was something that I used to teach and still do occasionally in Kundalini Yoga, amazingly enough. So the next part of this tape, and that's side A, is going to be a lecture from Seattle on ET technology. And that one you just heard will be continued on the following Tuesday. So we're doing a two-part, two-series here, which is always fun. Now we're going to jump into a little bit later period of time, and when we do that, you're going to...
And draw it an intervention.
Here's Dr. Bell again.
Usually I can get to a little bit of the intervention where it makes sense to you towards the end of the seminar.
Like I say, we've jumped from one topic to another.
A lot of people don't understand exactly what it is. It's not a bunch of spaceships.
I'm sure you can follow that.
They're beams and beaming people up and down. It doesn't work that way. Yeah, let me put all that on here.
Now it's the normal thing of putting the microphone on. We've heard so many times where Dr. Bell has microphonic problems. So here we're ripping through cables and doing all that funny stuff. They're taping me up after I've already started, of course, which is how stupid these people are. And that's the fun of it.
About three microphones here to wear.
Microphone. That's when you're in big league.
Now, so I can get. I need to get over to the slide projector. I'll have to put this thing down, I guess. What's happening here is, besides trying to get my seminar started worldwide, is that the extraterrestrials, the positive ones. And the negative ones have been here intermingling with our society for quite a while. And, you know, I wish they would get wireless microphones. We've only had them in our society for 30 years, but some people don't get it. Anyway, when the Greys started intermingling with our society back in the 50s, you know, with the discovery of the bodies and the extraterrestrials, the Air Force at one point captured some of these live entities from crashes, and they did ESP experiments. Later on, a treaty was made, and later on, the government was exposed, I think, firsthand to the knowledge of what the time sequence is all about, our time sequence at this point in time. And in time, everything has motion. It's like a giant Swiss clock. And our planet is rotating around the sun, and the sun is rotating around the Pleiades every 25,827.5 years, which happens to be the number of inches around the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which also forms an energy field around anything in the universe that's in the shape. And in this shape, which affects you directly, is the pyramid-shaped carbon atom in your body, because you're made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. And within this shape, a consciousness moves. The shape has the ability to bring the life force out onto the physical plane. And as this rotation around the Pleiades takes place, which is called the precession of the equinox, it also accentuates certain vibratory frequencies within the carbon atom. The body being made up of cells, made up of carbon atoms, made up of molecules and atoms, is able to only receive a certain amount of consciousness at a given time. It only has this limited understanding of where we are in space and time at a given time. Because everything works in cycles. Added to that knowledge, added to that expression, is the frequency of the soul that's in the body. The frequency of the soul allows the body to interpret something different than a different frequency of a soul in another body. Okay? There comes a time in life when life reaches a balance, when planes of consciousness merge and the truth starts to become a common denominator in our eternal existence, and it becomes brought up to consciousness without a threshold or a multitude of incarnating, you know, lives over and over and over again. There are seven levels of consciousness in existence that express outwardly and inwardly on the physical plane. Those are the ones listed up on the board there. The etmic plane, or the Lagoic plane, is the highest plane. In consciousness, if you were to close your eyes and imagine a black void of non-existence, which is called the infinite, or if you were to realize it's what's called pralaya by the Tibetans, which were taught by the rishis from the Pleiades, the non-existence of any planet, any star, any system before what is called the Big Bang and all these different theories that are always expressed, before that is nothing. That is the Lagoic plane. And then suddenly, boom, you have a white light. That's the first expression of the Lagoic plane. It's like God woke up out of his dreams and started to manifest something physical. That energy goes into the body at a certain point. And all of the other planes, and I'll explain them as we go along, go into the body and do something emotionally at some point. Okay? So this is one point of knowledge that they dearly try to cover up. Now, during this 25,827.5 year revolution around the Pleiades, we have 2,000 year periods known as ages, wherein the vibratory frequency of the incarnating soul is a common denominator for that age, i.e. we're coming in from the Piscean age, which is the age of the believer soul, a soul that's notched up enough consciousness to realize a belief system, and so all religion has been structured during that time period, the last 2,000 years. Then we move further around the evolutionary period. As we move around the evolutionary period further, we move into the Aquarian age. The Aquarian age is a higher frequency, which is a mixture. And the Aquarian soul is not a believer, doesn't need to structure a religion to make a belief work. But an Aquarian soul is one that's a knower. And so when the knowers come in, they come not only from many lives of Earth, but oftentimes lives free from the Earth, moving back and forth through the stars and the heavens. That's why there's such a potpourri of different kind of expressions. That's why the political scene is so ridiculous today, because they are in the fishbowl and not us at this point. Back before the Piscean Age and through the Piscean Age, we had the Renaissance times. In the Renaissance times, it's like the dark side of the sun. There's 12,000 years of darkness and there's 12,000 years of light. In the Renaissance times, certain white masters are kept here on this planet that are free of this planet. And these are different brotherhoods, like the White Brotherhood. During these times, we have the Inquisitions, the times when the idiots that control today our society and our governments put to death in any way, shape, form they can and destroy the knowledge that is being perpetuated by the White Brotherhoods and the White Masters. And this, of course, is known as the forces of good and evil. And it really exists, and it goes on through all space and all time. Bring that up to a head, the extraterrestrials work on both sides. And this force goes beyond the physical plane, but also into the astral plane, the plane that you go to when you leave your physical body and you come back from when you reincarnate again. We're coming to a point now where the continuity of consciousness, or the revolutionary speed of in and out of bodies, is becoming so fast that it really doesn't matter much anymore whether you're in or out. So more things become apparent. So the dark side realizes that religion is going to lose its clutches on mankind. And so the dark side is lashing out against the physical body and the physical form with all its multitudes of games and ideas and viruses and bacteria to stop the growth of this spiritual consciousness, which is powerless to stop. Meanwhile, the Andromedans and Pleiadians have come in and have started to open up and manipulate space and time and to move and not play by the rules anymore of what's good and bad. They just make positive changes in our time structure and our whole structure of society. And what you have to do in order to maintain your sanity, and that's, I stress that, maintain your sanity through all this, knowing what is good and what is bad, is to be free for change at a moment's notice. And that's a hard one to get a hold of because everybody is so traditional and so emotional on this planet. So we play a game. Pleiadians bring us the science, a science that teaches us how to keep the body tuned to some central level. The Andromedans play a bigger game. They work in all the vortexes of the Earth. They work with the weather changes. They work with the Earth's currents, the tectonic plates, and they stabilize, for example, the Southern California Basin. And so many, many, many of these negative prophecies won't come to pass, as you have been told that they would. Just write, take Nostradamus and trash him out, because his time has come and gone. Okay? Nostradamus was a smart individual who looked into a 25,000-year revolutionary cycle, and he looked back at another one, and he looked back at another one, and looking into history to the Atlantean cycle, to the Lemurian cycle, things are the same. The only thing that changes in these coming and going and ebbing of forces and tides are the players and the names. That's why I was even able to get Hitler's name into history, because Hitler probably was an Atlantean devil. You never know. So today what I want to do is show you how to bring the vibratory rate of the body into play to a degree and show you some of the stuff that goes on and make you help you understand it. Those of you that want to get involved with extraterrestrials and changes in society can get involved if you want to. Those of you that want to sit here and look at it as a picture show can look at this as a picture show. It doesn't really matter because sooner or later, the right people at the right times come together. Now, what I have been doing for the last 20-some years, I never thought I was going to do this when I worked at NASA. I had absolutely no interest in New Age when it started up. I was an industrialist, you know. I was into making money. I was into doing the normal things that the growth-resistant generation do. And then one day it all just fell apart for me. It just didn't work anymore. I just got totally frustrated, and changes happened. So as a result, I got into pyramids, and I became a contactee. I never thought I was going to be that. To me, it was absurd when I was younger. I believed in flying saucers all my life, felt I had something to do with them. But at NASA, we'd had some sightings, but I never knew I'd be standing up here talking to you like this. So you never know. Probably before I incarnated, I knew all this, you know. I'm sure a lot of you have been through the same scenario. So, first of all, they started telling our society about all these doomsday problems we were having. And they began to orchestrate revelation, because that's what always happens. Revelation is written so it can be orchestrated. It's written by the people that are going to orchestrate it. One of the big things that the Greys tried to do is convince our government that they created Jesus Christ through genetics. That's some of the stuff that they do, you know. And they did a damn fine job of it, too. Some of the secret government is scared to death of them, even today. But as a result, as the ozone layer started to deplete, and they began to make money from that by telling you it was one thing when it was really something else, meaning that the refrigerator industries and the painting industries began to really, and the plating industries and the EPA all got on the bandwagon to make money. They did nothing in their whole bandwagon to stop the ozone layer deterioration, because you still see jet aircraft up there flying. You still see on the popular science and popular mechanics new, bigger jet aircraft, which will even wipe out the ozone layer more and more. Luckily, in the Global 2000 report, they admitted that was happening. So with the orchestration of the ozone layer, they began to destroy humanity consciousness. And the best way to do it is through the immune system, because the immune system is what you rely on to get high from, to get inward with, to become part with God. That's part of the immune system. It does all of those things. But if they attack that through the foods, through the food chain, through the water supply, finally the bacterial viral chains, It makes it damn hard, unless you're smart, to see through the smoke, believe me. They first of all introduced in the 70s herpes 1, 2, and 3 into our society. Then at Langley in the early 70s, they decided that they were going to go deeper with this, and they married a Vishnu virus from a sheep with a bovine virus from a cow, created AIDS, married it into the hepatitis B vaccination, and injected all the homosexuals, 2,000 of them, in San Francisco in 1978 and killed them all. From that, they gave us greater strains until what we have now was on the front cover of Time magazine, what they call Revenge of the Killer Microbes. I'll pass this magazine around. You can look at it. And it's right here. And it talks about E. coli and Ebola, which is on its way now, bacteria. So you can just start passing that around if you want to look at the article, several pages long. We found ways to negate all these things. You could never fight each one of these viruses. They tried to tell us that the AIDS virus came from monkeys in Africa, yet in Africa, no monkey ever had AIDS or no gorilla. Now they're trying to tell us these worst viruses, which basically kill you in 3 days, which there's no way to stop them if you're a normal person. You can look in the inside. They tell you now these come from the rainforests, the beautiful rainforests where things are clean and things are pure. And they say, oh, they're coming up from Peru. Ebola is coming, E. coli, all these different things. The symptoms of that one, when it hits our society, it hit a ship down in Long Beach. It took 400 people out in an afternoon, a small amount of it. That was just an experimentation. I'm sure you remember the news 6 months ago when that happened. The entire ship was sick in about one half a day. And they weren't all eating fish, you know. Remember the movie Airplane, where they eat fish? It might as well have been that, played out. When you see it from my eyes. And so this virus that comes now, when it hits you, you think you got the flu for the first half a day. The next day, if you don't have a seizure, because it causes the blood to clot, the next day, if you're still alive after seizures or a heart attack, you just bleed to death because blood just turns into something less than water and just flows out of your body. People have died of it already. It's documented. It's in that article. And it is spreading. They haven't released it yet. They've been playing with it in different areas, saying, we hope it doesn't come here. So it becomes important to understand what's going on. Meanwhile, the consciousness is coming. There's people like Barbara Messiniak that are talking about the messengers of the Pleiades, and all these different things are coming in our consciousness. But to really get a hold of it is one thing, and to hear about it is another. And I think most of you in here really want to get a hold of it. I think that's more important. Now, to understand consciousness a little bit and how it works, we have seven levels of consciousness vibrating on seven levels of frequencies. When you start to work with your body and you start to work with consciousness, you've got to develop the eyes to see these changes. You have to develop the karma to get your aura field up, because you seek what you attract. I mean, you attract what you express. You've got to get these balances. You've got to get these energies working. It's not that complicated. It has to do with the vibratory frequency of the hydrogen atom, which is a proton and an electron. And if you don't think it's important, realize that atoms make cells and cells reproduce organs. The body is reproducing cells at the rate of 50 million per second. So it's a very profound effect. All nutrition, for example, all the vitamins, as many as there are, fall in these different categories. And all of your body energies and your consciousness also fall in these categories. For example, the first ray, the egoic energy, the one light out of blackness, which is called the father energy by the spiritualists, comes into the pineal gland in the head. The pineal gland is the first and highest and less understood in Western civilization, because it not only contains the consciousness of reality on this plane, but consciousness of reality and perception on all planes. It's very powerful. When it reaches the body, it expresses itself in red, the color red. When you feel it expressing yourself, it happens immediately when you wake up in the morning from the astral plane to the physical plane, and you decide to move your hand, to open your eyes. As soon as you have a desire to open your eyes, boom, first ray will is working immediately in your consciousness. It was working through the night, keeping your heart beating, and all these other kinds of things that have to happen that you don't think about. If you were to take a wire and put it across a battery with a positive terminal and a negative terminal, electricity would move from the negative to the positive. And through this wire, you'd have a magnetic field. If you were to reverse the polarity of the battery across the wire from positive to negative, the field would collapse, and the electricity would move in the other direction and then rebuild itself again. This moving back and forth of polarity, as a battery would be, works through the body. And this is the physical frequencies of the body. This is also regulated through the pineal gland. This is a whole series of frequencies. When you reach the respiratory rate of the heart beating and the action of the breath into the heart, you know, that's also one of the frequencies. It's called the Bohr effect. And this is all in synchronization. And this synchronization also needs nutrients in the body. The Pleiadians teach us the body on several levels. They teach us a level, a biochemical level. They teach us an electrical level. And they teach us an electrical precursing level, the level before electricity, the level of consciousness, before the biochemistry. This is once again triggered in the pineal gland. From the pineal gland, believe it or not, we make a big jump. The next jump is to the mundanic plane. Once you have the white light expressing itself, coming out of nowhere, then suddenly we have ourselves. Here's Fred Bell, here's the audience. We're aware of each other. We're not all one anymore. We are one, but we're not, because we're separated by time, individual space and time, each individual. Each of us represents a world of some sort. Our own realities are in that world. And at some point, we merge those worlds and attract or repel those worlds. That is the Christ aspect. That's the second aspect. It's the blue energy, and it goes into the heart chakra. Okay? It's the sun, the energies of the sun, the second aspect. Its color is blue. Certain vitamins and nutrients fall in that frequency, certain fruits, certain political expressions. Everything in the world falls somehow in these seven levels. If you look at my book, Death of Ignorance, there's charts in there that chart some of this stuff out. So when we go down to the heart, boom. From the heart, we go to the third aspect, intellect, thinking, thought, which is now the female aspect of everything. That goes in the center between the pineal gland and the heart, and that's the thyroid gland. It's green. Nature falls in that kingdom. Vitamin C falls in that kingdom. A lot falls in the thyroid. The emerald, gemstone emerald, falls in that kingdom. When you begin to realize you got a willpower, an attraction, repulsion problem, a thinking, intellectual problem, one of those rays is off in your body. You can bet on it. And when you get into stuff like EOF, and I'll show you how that works in a minute, you'll suddenly find out that you're in a lot of trouble if you don't know how to troubleshoot yourself, because these things are being programmed in by the negative society every day. From the third ray, you fall down into the next one, which is the yellow ray, which falls down into the stomach. And that's the buddhic energy. This is where the B complex nutrition comes from, solar plexus area. Breathing is centered down there. In breathing exercise, the chi energy comes from there, in martial arts and meditation. It becomes the center or the balance of the three higher powers into the physical body. It's very important. It's where we synthesize the sunlight through the ATP cycle, down through the Krebs cycle, into sugar, into energy. This is a cycle that's also been in here. Falls a hormone, for example, called DHEA, dehydroepiestrone. When you're 18 years old, that hormone falls out because of the vibratory frequency of this planet at this point in time. That's when your aging process really accelerates. That's when you start having to deal with weight problems. You can't eat junk food anymore. Your body will collapse. DHEA was one of the first nutrients made illegal in vitamin formulas by the FDA in a strong move about 3 or 4 years ago. If you can just go back and see the consciousness and see how the planet reacts to it and see how the Inquisition continues on. We come down to the next ray, which is the orange ray, which works through the higher and lower parts of the body, which is the Pleiadian ray, which is also the mental body. of all mental thoughts, and it has an upper level and a lower level. Higher mental free thoughts, and non-logical, and the lower level of thoughts, which are totally logical. Come down to the astral plane, the plane of birth and death, the plane of magic and order, but not absolute order, because that falls down the seventh ray, the violet ray, which is absolute order, ceremonial order. This is the order of the Fibonacci series in plants, for example. Okay? So you begin to see how this order works and how this goes through your body and how it works in our society. Now we need an eraser. That's going to be fun, huh? I guess we'll use this. Is there one here? Where is it? Oh, God. See what I'm like? Am I in my body or what? I'm one of these. You wouldn't guess I was one of these guys with my sunglasses on my head and looking for them. Well, there's one thing I'm an example of when I start talking on this stuff. It ain't Fred Bell here no more. It's somebody else. Fred Bell gets pushed out, believe me. So, now we got to look at something else, okay? Mineral kingdom. The body is 5% mineral. Okay, 5%. This 5% mineral controls 95% of all metabolic functions. Okay? The minerals vibrate in our bodies in three different frequencies, and they're very important because they come from the earth. This is what the earth gives us. And it gives us a lot of bad minerals because mankind has repeatedly put diseased corpses back into the earth when they should have been cleansed by fire and never returned. Okay? Just some of the things we've done wrong to the earth. Mining, strip mining, anything to rape the earth. The body has low-frequency minerals, middle-frequency, and high-frequency. And these minerals are very critical in the brain because they provide the essence of consciousness, the essence of consciousness. Because of these chains, the Pleiadians taught us how to make certain formulas in nutrition to help work these systems of pyramids and all these other energies to help then feed into vortexes. What we've done is taken individuals and trained them into the components of the body, made energy doctors out of them, put them in groups, put them in huge systems, strapped them into vortexes all over the earth, and then networked them. We've built a huge network this way, and it continues to grow. Coming out of the brain are 72,000 wires, and we just talked about wires, okay? Got 72,000 of them. These wires are broken down, they're called nadis, they're broken down into an A section of wiring, a B section, and a C section, for example. The A section would be the autonomic. It's the section of nerves that when minerals fire inside the synapses of the brain, send impulses which generate a huge amount of buddhic energy and a lot of logoic energy, causing the autonomic system to trigger off your breathing, your heartbeat, things that you don't think about. Okay? The second system is the sympathetic nervous system. It is triggering inside the body digestion, feeling, temperature, hot, cold. The immune system feeds a lot on this energy. It's almost the heartbeat of the immune system, okay? Then we have the most subtle one, which is called the parasympathetic nervous system, nervous network C. Starts with the earlobe and triggers with the gray matter in the stomach, okay? It's also called the psychic area of the body. And what it does is it gives you the vibratory frequency on your aura to allow you to communicate with the higher self and other beings, the higher self and beings that aren't here on this planet, and if you become a contactee of extraterrestrials, it's the number one tuning diode that you need. And of course, trace minerals are virtually impossible to find in foods. You can't breathe them in. They don't come from the sun. So you have to find some source of supplement for trace minerals, the most important and left out. And if you leave out any one of these three frequencies, you'll have a big hole in your personality and a big hole in your aura field and a big hole in your life. So they're very important in nutrition. When I got into the manufacturing of trace minerals years ago, I had no idea what I was getting into because I was led into by one of my friends. Today, it's one of the biggest things I see helping people. Just even the fact of women taking them, their nails don't break anymore. The only problem I have with taking them is my nails grows too fast and my hair grows too fast. So you're going to find some side effects from them that aren't exactly unpleasant, but you're going to have to trim your nails a lot and get your hair cut a lot if you're a guy, you know. I can grow this hair here in about 3 months, clear down to here, but it gets in the way, so I just keep it trimmed. I mean, it grows like crazy. But your consciousness goes with it, too, you know. So then we go from minerals, these three frequencies, down through the body. Now, if you were to look at what's happening in the body, and I have a slide, I think, if I can get over here. Here, I'm all tangled up. I'll get it. Back this thing up here.
First?
Yeah. This is something else that's real important to see here. Deals directly with the aura. This is right back here. This slide. Okay. This is a big area that's unknown about in our society. Here's the brain. This is the spine. We have, boom, all of the nerves going down through the body. When these nerves go down through the body, you need sodium, potassium, and phosphorus. These are separated by lecithin on each side. Now imagine there's 72,000 of these wires going down through there, okay? 72,000. You need potassium, sodium, and phosphorus to make them work. You know when you can think really clear, and then you don't think so clear? Usually when you don't think so clear, one of the things that's wrong with your body is potassium, sodium, and phosphorus are exited out of there. You don't have enough. And if you're a vegetarian, it's a good idea to get a lot more of this externally through nutrition, through vitamins, because the foods are so stripped by the ultraviolet coming in from the screwed up ozone layer that the plants that normally give this don't have it anymore. Okay, unless they're grown in black light like they grow marijuana plants in or something. And hydroponics, which most people don't grow their vegetables because it's not affordable. So these are some of the things that you got to take into consideration. Now, you know, if this were a piece of wire, you would have a battery here, and the electricity would just move through it.
Well, there it is. Next week, that will be continued, as well as the other part will be continued. I do believe the music is coming to get rid of us. Yes, there's exit music. Music to get kicked out by. To go away. Out in the ozone. Out of here. That kind of stuff. So that's where I'm going. I'm kicking myself out for the next wonderful show on bbsradio.com. Be sure to give us a call at 1-800-729-2603. Like I say, those of you are coming to the seminar, you're lucky you got rooms. The rest of you will have to get them somewhere else. They won't be at this beautiful place. They're going to be nearby, hopefully. Go to Pyradyne, PYRADYNE.com for information or give us a call. Hope you had a great evening. Until next Saturday night, I hope everybody out there is cool. Good night, Mrs. Calabasas, wherever you are. Show's over.
Read the most astounding book of our generation, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light by Dr. Fred Bell. Bring energy and healing technologies into your life that have been kept secret for centuries, exposed or highly classified research projects in use today at NASA and Area 51. The book is available on Dr. Bell's website, www.pyradyne.com. You'll also see more information about Dr. Bell's nuclear receptors, which allow our bodies to process all forms of electromagnetic and chemical toxins, assuring longer, healthier life. Call 1-800-729-2603 today.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.